Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
He does the research, analyzes the data, and checks the variables. He even submits his findings for peer review. He's the only man with a lab coat made entirely from NFL bed sheets. He's data scientist Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus. Only on the program.
Ain't giving up those bed sheets. No, he is not. Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus, brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. You're looking for a great place to go watch NFL football, college football. It's on at Twin Peaks. Of course, they got the Sunday ticket, even the ESPN Plus for those hard-to-find KU games. Jed, your Jayhawks seem to be spending a bit of time on the ESPN Plus.
They fought hard this past weekend. They had the cover all the way up until they didn't.
That's right. They did fight hard for the cover. I'll give them that. They actually weren't on the ESPN Plus either. They were on the big ESPN.
Yeah, they were on actually ESPN 2. But
they just got the ESPN Plus announcers? Is
yeah,
that right?
That's generally what happens.
Okay. I'm just curious about that. You can check it out right now. Go to Twin Peaks. Their happy hour rocking and rolling here very soon. Great, great happy hour at Twin Peaks. No one does it like Twin Peaks, whatever you're looking for, whether it's the 29-degree draft beer, their incredible tequila cocktails, their extensive bourbon category, top-shelf spirits, you name it, they got it. It's at Twin Peaks. Always a great happy hour. And, of course, the home of the National Football League. It is your football headquarters. It's Twin Peaks. Never settle. Twin Peaks. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com to check out the menu online. We welcome in the data scientist. Eric, how are you, sir?
Doren, I'm doing great. That was such a fun game on Sunday. And, you didn't seem as enthused when I messaged you, but I found that game extremely thrilling.
How was I supposed to? Do I need to look at my phone and see? Did I not go?
I don't know. I feel like a couple of like heart emojis would have sufficed. at least something like that.
He's not. He's more.
I feel like he just like messaged me back and said like, "Yeah, it was entertaining" or something like that. It was like, "Oh, but yeah, that was a fun game."
So here it is. By the way, how much fun was yesterday? They are so fun. I said great entertainment, no doubt. So yeah. Hang on here. Let's see if we can get
you're more of a here. You're not much of a emoji guy. You're more of a GIF guy.
Well, just because I can't figure out how to make the emoji thing work on my phone. So I go to the GIFs because I know how to make that work. So then I, grab a GIF and I'm off and running. Right? That to me just makes it easier.
Maybe I was just gushing over the fact that I irritated a bunch of Browns fans by saying their team wasn't as good. And during the game, I was getting a lot of old takes exposed, references. And then, of course, Kansas City does what they've almost always done, which is come back and win.
I'll find a fitting GIF or emoji to send back. And maybe I'll just pepper your phone the rest of the evening, with with little, thumbs up and fireworks and stuntmen, does that work?
Yeah.
That works.
Okay. Cool. I'll work on that. So it was a fun game. It was not quite the game that you and I thought it was going to be. Was it? I mean, I didn't think they were going to be rallying in the fourth quarter to get the win. I thought this was a game that they would play from in front. Do you agree with that? First of all, it didn't go the way you thought, or no, this is exactly how you thought it'd play out?
Well, I mean, last week we were talking about why the markets liked Cleveland, why it was only 6, and then eventually it closed at 5. People were liking Cleveland basically all the way up until kick. At this time last week, we thought Tyrann Mathieu was probably going to play in our eyes, right? Frank Clark, for whatever it's worth, was probably going to play in our eyes. Neither guy played, right? So two of the top three highest paid players on the defense were gone. Cleveland played a fantastic game, right? Like I thought they moved the football. They controlled the line of scrimmage early. I thought that the Chiefs actually did a very good job of pressuring Mayfield in the fourth quarter. And Kevin Stefanski pressed a lot of the buttons that you have to press to beat Kansas City, going for fourth downs. The two-point conversion obviously was aided by Chris Jones jumping offside, but you should always go for two when they give you the ball at the one. Like, that's a, you know, completely reasonable thing to do, and it made the Chiefs, you know, it made the Chiefs more aggressive. You know, they made the Chiefs have to play, you know, differently throughout the game. So, and I thought Mayfield played fantastic. You know, for the most part, he did everything he needed to do. They didn't have Odell Beckham. He was making some of the secondary receivers look good out there for a while. But ultimately, you know, the Chiefs' offense was great, especially in the third quarter. I thought they controlled the football game. And then, you know, on defense, they did that kind of what they do a lot of times, which is, you know, let Chris Jones make plays and then, you know, sort of clamp down at the end. And, you know, that was ultimately really fun to watch.
It was. Defensively, do you have concerns after the performance that we saw?
Yeah, I mean, I think that part of it is just that Cleveland is a very physical team and they run the ball really well. And early in the game, their receivers made plays on the ball. Like, there was that one throw to Njoku. I believe it was Thornhill on the coverage, or maybe it was Snead. I mean, Snead had, like, you couldn't have covered Njoku better than that, and Mayfield just made the throw to the only place that the ball it can be completed. I mean, there sometimes, you know, what I think is the second-best team now in the AFC, like, just sometimes plays really well. And, you know, I think it's a very – I made this impression, you know, on Twitter, but I think if you're a Browns fan, you come away really discouraged, which is, you know, you put together what was a very good game for the Browns, and it still wasn't enough. And if you're Kansas City, you think to yourself, well, they basically had the whole game set up for them. They got the ball first. You know, you were without two of your top three, three of your top players on defense, theoretically. And they march down the field, get eight on you, the maximum amount, while taking up half the quarter. You know, you couldn't have dreamed of a better start for Cleveland. And ultimately, Kansas City was able to find a way. You know, but it is, it's just set up that way. I was at the PFF offices, and my friends were deriding me for being a homer. But when Nick Chubb fumbled, I yelled, "Ball game." I was like, "This game's over." Like, all you have to do with Kansas City is give them one piece of daylight, and for the most part, it's enough.
If they didn't fumble, was it over the other direction?
I mean, it very well could have been, right? I mean, like,
but what do you think? Are you convinced that they were going to find the stop that they need? Because they got a stop after that.
I was not convinced that they were going to find a stop. I figured that at some point the Browns would mess up, and like I said, people in Cleveland are like, oh no, you know, like, the Browns messed this up themselves. They beat themselves. It's like, the punt was bad, for sure. But, I mean, that's just Juan Thornhill making a play on Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb is a fumbler. That's part of your team. You know, like, he's a great running back, but he fumbles. You know, I remember a game in New England when they, you know, he fumbled three times. And it was like, you know, that's kind of who he is, right? So, and that's, deal with the good and the bad with the player. Mayfield is a guy who, you know, sometimes can't make the throw. And it was that one third down where a guy was open and he just couldn't step into the throw. And that's part of who you are. Like, that's your team, you know. And ultimately, that's part of who the Chiefs are, too. Like, you know, they don't have the edge players that can, you know, get pressure consistently, especially if Frank Clark isn't who they think he is. The interior guys, I thought, played well. I thought Chris Jones made enough plays to be worth it. And on linebacker, I thought Nick Bolton played really well at times. And, you know, but you're playing with Ben Neiman half the time, too. And, you know...
It all comes back to Ben Neiman with you, always.
I mean, Ben Neiman's the problem. If they don't win the Super Bowl, it's all this undrafted random guy from Iowa's fault. But, you know, like, I'm concerned about the defense, but at the same time, again, like, you played a team that literally emptied the chamber against you and did everything. They forced the Browns into fourth down a couple times, and they weren't, like, fourth and inches. The first fourth down was, like, fourth and three, right? Like, They weren't completely bad. It's just that they played a good team who played really well, and then when that team didn't play quite as well, they got the three stops they needed to.
But in the end, it all comes down to the greatest player on the planet making the greatest play that, you know, the play that only he can make, because even though the fumble was big, the Chiefs got the ball. They got deep inside the red zone, but had to settle for a field goal, and the Browns just went 75 yards in nine plays and punched it in, and it was a nine-point game. But the very next play from scrimmage, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill for 75. It's a two-point game. Ensuing drive, first play, Chris Jones blows the guy up and gets a sack. They get a three and out. The punt, I mean, it all spun around when Patrick Mahomes was Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and it was especially impressive, the Chiefs' offense, because the Cleveland Browns' defensive line played a great game. You know, I think, you know, Clowney had an okay game. I think Garrett was amazing. I think Garrett, for a while there, was leading the league in pressures. Max Crosby could have out-dueled him last night, but Garrett played a good game. There was the play, the sack, you know, and the drive. The one negative I will say, and this is different from their 2020 season, Chiefs had the ball at four with a chance to ice the game, and they couldn't, you know, like they had to give the ball back to Cleveland. And that was because, as Seren has been saying this entire offseason, Orlando Brown bent his waist instead of his knees, and Myles Garrett dipped on him and got to Mahomes
yep.
probably record time. You know, that offensive line I don't think played great. I think interior they played fine, but the two tackles, you know, didn't have the best games in the world. But what Mahomes was very intentional in the pocket. You know, he had a couple plays where he dropped back and he knew that it wasn't going to be great. And he sort of like weaved through the linemen, to get himself into a different pocket that I thought was really impressive. And, you know, if he had a couple secondary receivers step up, there was the Robinson play in the end zone where I think if DeMarcus is maybe more aware, that might be a touchdown. There were a couple other plays, but, you know, it was interesting because Mahomes very much protected his O-line on Sunday from what could have been a catastrophe, and I think that was also a positive because I don't think you're going to play as D-lines as good as Cleveland and playing as well as Cleveland all that much this year.
We're going to dive deeper into the offensive line when we come back with Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. You know, they do these grades. They hand out grades for the players, and they handed out grades for all the Chiefs. And we'll see how well the PFF guys behind Eric Eager felt like the offensive line played. We'll talk about that next. The data scientist is here, brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. Great spot to go watch you some football. You can do it Monday night, Thursday night, Friday night. Really, there's college football almost every night of the week now, Saturday, Sunday. Sunday ticket is on, and, of course, that 29-degree draft beer makes the games even better. It's at your neighborhood, Twin Peaks.
Program with Seren Petro.
I could listen to him for hours.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Derek Carr, 30th player to throw for 400 yards on Monday Night Football. Who was the first to do it?
The first to throw for 400 yards on Monday Night Football. Eric, I got this in one try, as far as you know.
Ooh, okay. I think I might have a decent shot, okay? Dan Fouts.
That's not a bad guess, by the way.
Dan Fouts was the fourth.
While he chews on that subject, I will tell you that Eric Eager, brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks, twinpeaksrestaurant.com. You can get the food to go, made from scratch menu, the most underrated part of what's going on. Never settle. Twin Peaks. Eric, guess number two?
Man, that's...
Give it the date.
Okay.
December 11th, 1972.
Has to be Namath then.
Yep.
Joe Namath.
He gave me the date, and that's when I got it, too. I said Unitas first.
Typically Namath, one touchdown, two picks.
That's classic.
The most overrated Namath. Quarterback in NFL history.
No. Oh, come.
Yes.
I'm going to, Curtis, you know, I'm a big fan.
Wait a minute. Do you object because you think he's third on that list, or do you object because you don't think he should even be remotely called overrated?
I think that we look at his touchdown to interception ratio and don't adjust for era. And
even if you adjust for era, it still pales in comparison.
Look at it compared to Len Dawson's.
I am of the opinion that he is in the Hall of Fame because of one completion. If he doesn't throw to Don Maynard from 50 yards to set up the game-winning touchdown against the Raiders in the 68 AFL Championship game, a 50-50 ball as it fluttered in the winds in Flushing. They don't go to the Super Bowl. They don't win. He's not in.
Stay on point. I know where you're going to go, Eric. Don't bring up the Tyreek Hill catch. Stay on point.
No, I think... No, that's not it. Like, Mahomes, no. I'm not... My issue is, like, you're looking at a guy who... I mean, Namath's career yards per attempt was, like, 7.4. 8.2... 8.3. Like, you guys know that I'm a fan of Jameis Winston, not even before last week, but I'm just a fan of that.
Yep.
Of that. Like, if you're not going to be Patrick Mahomes and you're not going to be like Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, all those guys, I'd much rather you be Jameis Winston than like Sam Bradford. Okay. So I think we're not adjusting for error properly when we just look at his touchdown interception ratio. The other thing, too...
Wait a minute. So are you saying Jameis Winston is a Hall of Famer?
No, I'm saying that, like...
I know.
I'm saying we over... And, like, Phillip Rivers led the league in picks a couple times. Or he had 20 picks or more a few times. Like, interceptions are part of a healthy quarterbacking experience if you're not one of the truly elite players.
Led the league in touchdowns once, led the league in interceptions four times.
Yeah, I mean, he also led the league in Pro Football Reference's approximate value. I mean, he led the league in passing yards per game three times, too. Yards per attempt twice.
What was his overall record, win-loss record?
He's a 500 quarterback. Okay. But don't,
yeah, stop getting the facts in the way of a narrative you're trying to create.
But when during his peak, right, during his peak, 8-5-1, 11-3, 10-4. Then he had a couple of injury seasons. Then he was 7-6. Like, a lot of that is the fact that his last 3 years, he was 3-10, 1-7, and then his year with the Rams, he was just 2-2. Like, I agree. Like, we're not talking about a really good career, but there are people out there. So
but he's in the Hall of Fame. That's the point.
That's my point.
I guess that's the issue. Like,
I think he's the only member of the Hall of Fame who is there because of one play.
I love that.
Overrated doesn't mean bad. Okay, I don't think the one play.
I think without that play, he doesn't get there. But it's not because of that one play. He did do more. He was the first 4,000-yard passer. He was Joe Cool. There's other elements there. I don't like the one. I know you're saying, hey, if he doesn't get to that Super Bowl, he doesn't get there. But he did. Okay.
And if Jimmy Johnson didn't like think about trading Herschel Walker on a jog in Texas one day, like. Troy Aikman's not in the Hall of Fame.
Well, and that's where I was going was, if you want to say, no, wait, come on, Joe Namath is third because Troy Aikman's first, then I got your back 1,000,000%. Because Troy Aikman is grossly overrated.
I mean, Troy Aikman was like Bobby Hebert with, like, better weapons.
You're pushing an open door here. I won't argue with that.
Yeah, so there we go. We're all on the same page as far as this goes. We're talking to Eric Eager. That was good. That was really good. But I know Bobby Hebert is a personal friend of yours, so I'm not shocked. I have the background intel on you, so well done, my friend. By the way, Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, what we were playing for, the gas station, it's at 47th and Mission, the original. Check it out. If you haven't been there, you have to pay homage to the greatest barbecue location ever, coming straight out of the gas station. Of course, they're beautiful locations at 119th and Strangline, 117th and Road. Don't forget they cater as well. Go to joeskc.com today.
Petra, I got a story there.
Okay.
I had a couple friends visit Kansas City over the last, like, 3 months or so. All asked where to go. I did refer them to Joe's, and they agree that not only is the best barbecue in the city, they agree that it's the best barbecue they've ever had. So
yes.
I told my friends I would say that on air when I got a chance.
They're well said, well done, well put. No one's going to argue in this room, that's for sure. All right, talking about the offensive line. You know, I don't know if you've heard, there's this website. I'm a big fan. It's called Pro Football Focus. You can get there by going to pff.com. And they do these grades. And it's great because they grade all the players. And I know you were talking about the offensive line being pretty good. I thought I'd share with you the grades that this independent, unbiased group gave to the Chiefs' individual offensive linemen. Creed Humphrey was the sixth best center out of 32. Joe Tooney was the 37th best guard out of 65 of them. Trey Smith was the 43rd best guard out of 65 of them. Lucas Niang was the 45th best tackle out of 68, and Orlando Brown was number 54 out of 68. You want to connect the dots on how the O-line didn't have a tough day?
Oh, I thought I said that Patrick protected them, didn't I, in the previous segment?
Oh, I thought you also kind of added in. Because, like, I get that it was a stiff competition that they were facing in the Cleveland Browns front four. But it was, and I also give them, and we'll talk more about this with Tim Grunhard coming up in our next hour, because I know he's going to want to dive into the offensive line, being a Chiefs Hall of Fame offensive lineman. Yeah. But I get that there's a chemistry that needs to be built, and it can't be built off a handful of snaps in preseason. So I do think they're going to be better as it goes along. But I don't think there's anything wrong with admitting that, like, I mean, Orlando Brown doesn't look like a top-shelf left tackle. I mean, like, that, and I know you and I have gone round and round on our podcast about this. Really, you and Jeff Chedia have. But, like, that didn't concern you a little bit? Like, I get it. Not everybody has a Myles Garrett, but most guys that are going to be most defensive ends, right, defensive ends that are going to play in the playoffs are going to look more like Myles Garrett than they are Alex Okafor.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think in the previous segment I said that I don't think they graded well. I thought Pat knew that, though, right? Like, when you looked at Pat in the pocket, like, he was very proactive in the pocket, wasn't he? Like, he sort of did the whole drop back and then, you know, sort of weave through the, you know, like, between the guard and the tackle on the right side of the line. He did that, like, proactively.
Right. Okay, but pause that thought. Let me ask you. So before you move on to the next part, he did until I think the last play that they were trying to seal the deal, right? Not when they kneeled it down to end the game, but the last series where they were trying to get a first down and finish the game. To me, they weren't just trying to get a first down. I haven't had a chance to look, and maybe it came out today, the all-22s. But I want to go back and look at what the routes that were being run, because Patrick Mahomes seemed to drop back extra deep, almost like it was a jet chip wasp. Do we have time to run wasp? That's the part I always remind people that, like, he's asking the question. Like, I don't know that we can protect long enough for me to run this play, but if we have time, do we have time? I want to run wasp. Well, I think they were going for a big hitter to not just get the first down, but, like, let's end this thing now. Because we've seen Andy Reid go for it on fourth and short twice last year, right in the playoffs against the Browns. He did it, and against, was it the Bucks in the regular season, I guess. He did it. He went for it on fourth down and threw the ball and converted. I think this was a similar kind of mindset. Listen, we're not just getting a first down. You know, they're going to be sitting at the yardstick. We're going to go over the top. We're going to end this thing with the offense right now. And so I think, yes, he needs to get out of that mindset of I can just keep dropping back further because the tackles are outclassed and they're going to just keep trying to shove guys upfield because they're counting on the interior of the offensive line to create the pocket and allow him to step up Tom Brady style. But doesn't that eliminate some of the plays in the playbook if he's got to always play it that way from how he manages the blocking around him?
Yeah. I mean, that play, they basically dialed up and said, look, Orlando, you're single blocking Myles Garrett. And, you know, sometimes you trust your players to make a play, and you know, that certainly didn't happen in this game. Humphrey, you know, had a clean sheet in pass protection. He did have a penalty. Trey Smith only gave up one pressure. Tooney only one pressure, but had, I believe, two penalties. Niang and Brown gave up five pressures, including three hurries, a sack, a hit each guy. What was a little bit concerning as well is Clyde Edwards-Helaire two pass blocking snaps. So two times he stayed in the block. He gave up a pressure both times. Darrell Williams, too, he gave up a pressure one of the two times. So there's also that where, like, they weren't supporting, from the backs either, which is unfortunate. But I'm looking for improvement. I think the improvement from the Super Bowl was, A, they're not playing quite as good of a defensive front, but I think, B, they were more pro. Like, I think Pat realized that more of the responsibility is on him. I mean, And you know, that's part of the thing with him, right? In terms of, like, wanting to be, the best quarterback in all of football, like, you sort of have to deal with that a little bit.
We're talking to Eric Yeager from Pro Football Focus. The data scientist is with us. Eric, I don't know if I'll call it breaking news, but it's at least of note. Go ahead and hit that again so I can – I waited too long. League sources, this is from Adam Schefter. League sources believe Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy will emerge as a head coaching candidate, not necessarily the lead candidate, but a head coaching candidate for USC. Bieniemy is from Southern California, has told confidants in the past that USC is one of the only college jobs that might interest him.
And additionally, he was at Colorado with USC AD Mike Bone.
So what do you think of that?
I mean, I think that it disrupts things a little bit, especially if he takes the job. You know, he probably would have to take the job before the season, right? Before the season ends.
Yes, I would assume. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll just go interim the whole way. But to me, they didn't make this move. Well, maybe they did. It's puzzling to me. If you were one bad game against Stanford away from firing your coach, why didn't you fire him in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, people are weird, though. Like, the thing about Clay Helton is, like, the thing about all coaching hires is that there is a huge incentive to keep them, right? Because they're guaranteed contracts, right? So, it'd be different if you could move on from him and, you know, with a modest buyout or nothing at all. But, like, you know, there was, like, a needle that USC could have threaded this year to have a successful season, even independent of, you know, having kind of a boob as a head coach. So, That's, I think.
So what do you really think of Clay Helton? I mean, don't hold back on us.
I mean, dude, I don't know. You guys are Kansas State fans. Well, you guys, some of people are Kansas State fans. I don't know if you watched Stanford against Kansas State, but that was the biggest. Stanford was the worst team in college football week one, unequivocally. And you got to give some of that credit to Kansas State.
Yes.
And then they go and dump truck USC. Like, I would have fired Clay Helton, too. Like, that was pretty bad. I mean, even Kansas State fans couldn't have enjoyed that Stanford-Kansas State game.
That's three in a row that USC has fired before Halloween. They're full-time coaches. They fired Sarkisian in 2015, and they fired...
Because Dave Plaschke decides when they
Lane
fire
Kiffin.
Coaches. The LA Times columnist.
Bill Plaschke.
Whatever the hell.
Yeah. They fired Lane Kiffin on the tarmac
in
2012.
He writes a column that the guy's got to go, and the AD or the president goes, well, all right, it's out of my hands. Make the move. Plaschke says he's out. Listen, we don't really care who ends up at USC. I mean, we do as college football fans. We got a lot of time to talk about that. Maybe, I don't know. But let's talk about it from an Eric Bieniemy standpoint. This job's kind of a coach killer, right? Like, no one's come out of USC looking good besides Pete Carroll since freaking John Robinson.
Yes.
Well, and
even John Robinson the second time left looking like a boob.
Yeah, right. First time it was fine. That was 50 years ago.
Yeah.
40 years ago.
I mean,
not
it's...
Like that, but then- Carroll also, like, had to cheat, basically, to get everything to work there.
He didn't cheat. He just didn't pay attention. There's a difference, right? There's a big difference.
Yeah. Is that where we're going with?
That's right. That's right. Exactly. I think not paying attention is something that's required of many head coaches in college athletics. Hopefully that's a little different with name, image, and likeness. But, listen, the job has been a coach killer, and I don't think it gets better with the Rams and Chargers sitting in town.
No. Right. I mean, football in L.A., I mean, good thing they're good now because Chip is an investor in PFF, so I like him. But, like, that first UCLA game against Hawaii, like, there was no one in the stands, right? Like, there's a lot to do in L.A., and if you're bad, the city can turn on you pretty bad, you know, and now that there are more options, that doesn't bode well for the tenants there. I think for the Chiefs' perspective, it's probably beneficial for them to simply, like, allow – what do you think? I don't like this idea of him doing both jobs.
Oh, no, he can't do both. No, that's an impossibility.
But that's kind of de facto what some of these guys are doing, right? Like, when Shanahan was coordinating the Falcons' offense in January of 2017 – he was also preparing himself for the San Francisco job, right? Like, there's no bones about that. And, you know, when Brad Childress was coach, you know, like, all these guys that were, like, you know, that had these jobs sort of hooked up. They're doing both. And I think it's bad in January, but I think it's even worse if it's October through January, February.
Oh, I agree. So like, if he's going to be the guy, he should go and go right now. And I think Andy Reid will send him on his way with his blessings. I think they'll bump up Mike Kafka and they'll make it all work. You know, I mean, I think Andy Reid does a lot of the heavy lifting as it is already. But I think with Mike Kafka in place, you know, they'll do it. I'm interested, though. Is this the job Eric Bieniemy should take? Like,
no.
If you were his agent, no. Would you say take this job, Eric?
I don't think the path from NFL to college to NFL is impossible, but I also don't think it's a good path. Like, Kingsbury had a good day on Sunday, but I don't think Kingsbury's long for the NFL. You know, Urban Meyer's a nightmare already.
Well, let's even take that out, that his end game is not to be an NFL head coach. Is this a job that you're going to have 4 years from now if Eric Bieniemy takes it?
No. They had some loyalty to Helton, right? Like, Helton was around for a while.
Right, but so, I think we'd all agree odds are no, and going and failing at USC does not help you get the next high-paying job or the next head coaching job.
Helton was the interim, and then they hired a new coach, and then he stayed and then was named again. Do I have that correct? He has had two separate stints at USC, my recollection
is.
Yeah,
I would say I hope that Bieniemy was just saying that as an attaboy to his friend. Like, I really do, you know, especially, I mean, you look around the league and there's so many teams that step on it all week. You know, like, there's an NFL coaching job is going to be available to him, and if he should wait it out for that.
I don't know. For 3 years he's been waiting, and I think that's why his name is coming up, because the colleges might be willing to go down a road that, for whatever reason, and we've speculated on it before, and it pisses people off around here, but he keeps not getting jobs for some reason.
Yeah. Well, and so with respect to the Chiefs, I think Kansas City will be fine, right? Like, Kafka looks to be the guy in waiting. You know, Greg Lewis has been with the staff for a while. He'll probably get a bigger role, probably deserves it. You know, it'll be fine. Like, I think that they'll be okay. Andy, as you said, is really the guy. I mean, to me, not to say that Bieniemy adds no value. He certainly probably does. But in game, like, I don't see how it's much more than Andy, you know, sort of, you know, vibing his intuition all game. Like, that's kind of the view I get. And, you know, I think Bieniemy's probably really good support, but I think in a season like this one, they could probably get by.
Let's take a break. Eric Eager, the data scientist from Pro Football Focus, is with us. He's brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks Happy Hour. Coming up, take advantage of it. 29-degree man-sized beer. It's a perfect place to watch you some Royals baseball, NFL football, college football. It's all at Twin Peaks.
The program with Soren Petro.
Anybody out there have any questions? Why are you so stupid? Oh, that's a good question. Anybody else have any questions?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're talking to the data scientist, Eric Eager, from Pro Football Focus. Eric, the Baltimore Ravens frittered away a victory last night, fumbling it. Lamar Jackson, by the way, if the Ravens even consider giving a long-term deal to Lamar Jackson, I will laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. Level of fear you have with the Baltimore Ravens, Chiefs going to Baltimore next week?
The market on Kansas City was laying 2.5. This was after an off season where the game was basically a pick 'em. It was the only game of the season for the Chiefs that they weren't favored when they released all 17 games lines. But now it's 4, and then it was 4.5. So people bought back. I mean the NFL, besides the quarterback position, is a very weak link system. And the Ravens are losing players at, you know, Marcus Peters, offensive linemen, wide receivers. We did see Sammy Watkins play a Sammy Watkins game last night, though. And their offense is very weak link as well because of the running game that's required with the quarterback in Lamar Jackson. So Of all the, quote, elite teams in the AFC, I thought that they were the most subject to injuries, and they've had them in spades. So I'd be a little bit worried. I do think the team that the Chiefs beat this weekend, the Cleveland Browns, are the favorite in that division.
All right, so you think the Chiefs go in and handle business against the Ravens again? That's not a wounded animal to be feared that their backs are against the wall and you're going to get their best shot.
I think minus a lot of mistakes by Kansas City, minus Andy kicking field goals instead of going for touchdowns in the red zone, that kind of stuff. Like, I think I was nervous last time the Chiefs, but last year in Week 3 they were 3-point underdogs. Like, yeah, they're now 4-point favorites. I don't know if I blame the points of Kansas City, but they should be favored.
Eric Eager, you're the man, buddy. We appreciate it. We encourage everybody to get to PFF and check out their great work. We'll do it again next week.
You're the best, Ren. Take care.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question, sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, how many quarterbacks in NFL history have thrown 3 touchdown passes in Week 1 4 years in a row? Brought to you by Good Sense.